BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
It was the biggest protest I've ever been to. It was very much a party, celebratory atmosphere. There were bikes with sound systems. While there was a sense of frustration, there was a sense of hope as well.
Chris Hilliard was one of thousands protesting against student fee rises in London in 2010. But as he arrived in Parliament Square, the mood turned angry.
GT from 99, if you can see our footage, it looks like the line's being breached outside Westminster Abbey.
A crush developed. Chris and his brother Andrew tried to leave.
It was quite packed with other students, and we saw a line of police in front of us and a load of students behind us, and we were slowly moved forward.
Yeah,
I had a sense of it was going out of control, definitely.
Chris found himself in a tussle amid a line of mounted police, and it was claimed that he pulled one of them off his horse. The brothers were later charged with violent disorder and faced up to 5 years in prison. According to mum Jennifer, the family was left devastated.
It changed our lives forever. It changed the way we look at police. It could have destroyed the lives of my children. You know, I find that quite breathtaking.
Possible investigation through the crowd, over. 17, yes, 71 and 72.
Crucial to the prosecution was video evidence.
So the police video footage was very narrow. It was very much a couple of officers with cameras and a few bits and pieces that they'd got from one or two other sources, mainly the mainstream news.
But with the event covered so widely, the family found other videos which told a very different story.
We managed to track down a journalist who had footage that had never been shown, that showed the boys actually talking to two police officers. So it clearly proved that there was no provocation on their behalf. They had not instigated anything. And that was a real key turning point for us. So when we went into the retrial, we had a load of additional footage.
Footage which saw the brothers acquitted and each given £25,000 compensation by the Metropolitan Police. It's left the family deeply suspicious of police use of video evidence and fearful of the next big thing in surveillance, facial recognition. The Met's one of only two UK forces using the technology, and on Friday, it announced its first operational use would come in the next month.
The boys did nothing wrong. They absolutely did nothing wrong. They were completely exonerated, but it was 5 years of their lives. Now, with you add facial recognition into that mix, and you just increase that risk.
Even when acquitted, the brothers say they struggled to get their information and photos removed from police records. The Met says their details were deleted from its operational and custody databases. Nonetheless, the Hilliards worry that once your image is on a police database, facial recognition means you're more likely to get picked up. They fear it will deter legitimate protesters.
Facial recognition means students think about those consequences in a far harsher light. It follows them, it traces them, and it builds up. It's going to really put the kibosh on people wanting to go to demonstrations and wanting to get involved in activism.
Computers have been comparing and matching human faces for decades. But today's powerful machines can do it the very moment you pass the lens. Technology that can be fitted to many of Britain's army of CCTV cameras. The result? A hidden proliferation of facial recognition in our streets, our airports, and even our shopping centres. Millions of innocent people are potentially being scanned without necessarily being told. For this episode of File on 4, we'll be revealing where this new technology is being used, who's behind it, and we'll also be hearing from those who fear its effects. Within the last few days, the Met, the UK's largest police force, revealed it's turning its trials into operational use in the face of widespread criticism. Facial recognition supporters say it's helping keep us safe. Critics aren't so sure. Some see the same reliability problems as the police video evidence in the Hilliards case.
If you're confronted with video evidence, it seems to be incontrovertible truth. But we know from well-publicised trials, for instance, about the fallibility of this as evidence. We can see this replicated in terms of facial recognition. Again, facial recognition will only tell us with a degree of belief, a degree of certainty, but it's in essence, it's a computer inference that somebody's identity matches that to which we suggest it is.
Professor Peter Fussey of the University of Essex monitored the Met's early use of the technology and saw some surprising results.
Sometimes it's very clear, sometimes it's very clear it's not. So sometimes a computer gets the gender wrong. The gender wrong or ethnicity wrong. Or on some cases, people have lost 10 years in age by the time they walk past the camera from being on the database and things like that. And so, you know, any officer looking at that will go, well, that's clearly not that individual.
But you're talking about instances in which the computer literally couldn't tell the gender of the person.
Yeah, so in all uses of this kind of technology, you know, in a laboratory, technology might work one way. In the real world, outside, you know, it's much more ambiguous. There are variations in lighting.
In some police trials, more than 90% of the matches turned out to be incorrect, though the police say most errors were spotted before any action was taken, and that the accuracy has since improved. Despite the reservations of some, facial recognition is being rolled out rapidly, especially by private security companies tackling retail crime like shoplifting. Clacton-on-Sea in Essex may seem an unlikely venue for cutting-edge law enforcement, but it's the home of Counter Crime Partnership, run by former police officer Scott Pepper.
Can you give me a situation update? Over.
I joined him as he visited some of his shopkeeper customers.
No male sighted heading towards Morrison. I'm just going to pop down and assist if anything kicks off. Over.
Yeah, that's received. We'll head in your direction now. Over.
Here in Clacton, where the Counter Crime Partnership is up and running, along with the radios, along with the analysis of CCTV and facial recognition, there's already been an incident. Chap's been spotted lurking around one of the stores here, and the security guard has used the system to put out an alert. One of the other security guards from another store has rushed over here to help out, so we're going to see what's afoot.
So basically, there's a gentleman that's a prolific offender. He's recently come out of prison due to an incident where he was stopped shoplifting and he pulled out a dirty needle on a security member of staff. So we got the call that this gentleman has been spotted and we all head down just to assist.
How do you know it's the chap that you're looking for?
Basically, so it's facial recognition.
Here's how it works. Businesses in the Clacton scheme submit photos of suspects who are added to a watch list along with any details known about them. If a shopkeeper in the scheme spots someone suspicious, they can take a photo and use facial recognition to look that person up on the watch list. For one bookshop in Clacton, it's become part of the daily routine.
If somebody comes in and you get an image of them, you can use this system to actually look them up, the facial recognition system.
Yeah, we can go on to, it's either on the radio itself or we've got the app on our phone, so we can automatically go on and find that person and be like, yeah, so we know who that is.
So what kind of info do you get?
Their height, there's a picture on there of them from wherever they've been photoed within town, if it's been within a shop or if it's been on someone else's CCTV, their age, also their name as well, so we know exactly who we're looking for.
By signing up, local businesses agree to enforce a so-called exclusion zone, barring from their shop anyone put on the watch list by any other business in the scheme. It's a one-for-all, all-for-one system. But Scott's got even bigger plans. He's in talks with a tech company to introduce live facial recognition mounted on security guards' uniforms. That would mean scanning everyone walking past the cameras and looking them up on the watch list automatically, instantly. His business customers are in favour.
I mean, the future Scott's talking about is the body-worn thing. Yeah. So do this live and in real time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be a brilliant idea.
If this comes in, though, you'll be scanning everybody who comes in, all your customers.
Yeah.
Do you think you should warn them that that's happening?
My customers, I think, are very much on par with it. If someone does spot a shoplifter, they will come and tell us. So I think people are always watching out for other people. I don't think my customers would have an issue with it. I think if they did, I think they'd be able to approach us and we'd be able, if we could turn it off, we'd turn it off. The shops are closing down because of the theft rate, and if we can reduce that, why not? Yeah.
Counter Crime Partnership is registered with the Information Commissioner's Office, the UK's data watchdog. Legal experts say its rules try to help people like Scott steer a tricky ethical line. Dean Armstrong is a barrister specialising in technology law.
There is a genuine desire to try and strike the balance. You know, there are two conflicting things here. There's the issue of human rights. There's also the issue of prevention and detection of crime, substantial public interest. In those situations, you are going to get tensions, to use a good legal term. And how those tensions are resolved appropriately and adequately will depend on individual case-by-case basis.
In Scott Pepper's case, he admits when it comes to facial recognition, there can be a big difference between the rules and what happens on the ground. A shoplifting suspect should be told about the exclusion zone watch list and how they can appeal, for example. In reality, that doesn't always happen.
We set the rules out that say this is the process you can follow to not be part of the exclusion zone. In practice, of course, you know, you're in the town centre and the security guard has now taken the coat out of your bag that you've not paid for. You don't have that conversation in the field. What's actually happening is that someone that's been involved in a crime is identified entering somewhere that they've been asked not to enter. Mm. So I guess you'd argue that if someone's not done anything wrong, then they wouldn't have anything to worry about.
Some people might sort of say, well, hang on, if you're setting up exclusion zones, you're keeping lists of mm-hmm. suspects and so on, this sort of stuff should be handled by the police, the courts, maybe the councils. It shouldn't be up to a sort of private company.
Well, all we're doing is CCP is providing the tools to the security guards and to the people who are working in the community, in the shops, our friends and family. We're not making those judgment calls. I think the end does justify the means.
The technology behind the current Clacton scheme is run by a company called Centrisys, based in Leeds. In a statement, the company told us they have policies, processes and impact assessments in place to protect people's data, and they're monitored and refined. They also said that they've invested heavily and taken professional advice to make sure they fully comply with the law. So what are the rules on using facial recognition systems and gathering together the watch lists that fuel them? Lawyer Dean Armstrong has advised companies in this area and says the law comes from the new European data rules, the GDPR, and its UK equivalent, the Data Protection Act. Between them, they provide various justifications for using facial recognition.
One of those which is the most used, and certainly I've come across, is prevention or detection of unlawful acts. So if we're dealing with a company which is, for example, processing sensitive personal data for the purpose, for example, of stopping someone committing crime, video recordings in shops are a very good example.
Most of the companies that we've been looking at in this space are absolutely involved in prevention of crime, in detecting crime and so on. So
yes,
it does sound like so long as you can say, look, this is all about stopping crime, you're okay to go.
Well, it's not all about that, because the one issue, of course, and the significant issue which flows through is that it has to be proportionate. You can deploy measures to stop crime, but they may be disproportionate. And so it isn't quite as simple as that. And we are here talking about use of data which is, by its very nature, extremely sensitive.
Some of the companies we've spoken to are looking at the idea of automated facial recognition. So the idea of scanning everybody who comes past the camera and sort of comparing those people to a watch list that you've got. At that point, there's many, many people affected by that.
You mentioned the word watch list, and we've all heard of the term watch list, but one has to be very careful about a watch list. Who compiles the watch list? Do the police compile the watch list? Who controls that watch list? Just because, for example, and take this as a good example, just because someone 6 months previously had been recorded apparently taking something from a shop, should that image be retained on the watch list 6 months later?
Even some in the facial recognition industry itself are concerned at the curation of these watch lists by private firms. Digital Barriers is a London-based company that sells facial recognition technology mainly to police forces and governments. Zach Doffman is Digital Barriers' chief executive.
Where I think there is an issue, and you're right, that there are instances of this now, is as a private organisation saying I will build a watch list that I will own and control, I will put people into it, I in essence will rent access to that watch list. So I'll give you a system, a facial recognition system, which in essence is used against data that I as the private vendor control, and I will tell you if there's a match. I have a huge issue with that, because I think that the data needs to be owned by the organisation that has the security challenge or the police.
In terms of the regulation you're talking about, what would happen then to those private companies?
So I think regulation needs to draw a line below which facial recognition is a prohibited technology. And in my view, private organisations compiling watch lists, putting members of the public onto those watch lists and selling access to them should be prohibited.
Private companies aren't just working with their own watch lists for facial recognition. They're increasingly working on trials with police forces too. Police supply the photos, the private companies and landowners have the CCTV. It's one of the most controversial areas of facial recognition. News last year of one such trial in London's King's Cross triggered national headlines, concern from the mayor and an investigation by the Information Commissioner's Office, which is currently ongoing. Another six-month trial at Manchester's Trafford Centre shopping mall that scanned an estimated 15 million people was halted after the Surveillance Camera Commissioner intervened, but no regulatory action was taken. And now, Phylon 4 has been given new details of another scheme which affected millions of visitors to one of the country's biggest shopping centres, here at Meadowhall near Sheffield, which in 2017 underwent a £60 million refit, as its promotional video explained.
I'm really excited about the future for Meadowhall. The extension is fantastic. It will provide new leisure, new food and beverage, new event space. So I want people to wake up on a Saturday morning and think, what am I going to do today? I know, I'll go to Meadowhall.
One new addition the adverts didn't mention, however, was facial recognition cameras. Phylon 4 has been given previously unreleased details about a month-long trial held at the centre. Keen to test the technology, Meadowhall's owner, British Land, approached South Yorkshire Police, who provided four images. Three were of people wanted for serious offences. One was a missing person who was found as a result. For a four-week period between January and March 2018, Meadowhall's cameras scanned the faces of an estimated 2 million shoppers. British Land told us they didn't have signs explicitly warning visitors, but they did delete all personal data collected immediately after the trials. They said facial recognition isn't currently at use in any of their properties. Civil liberties group Big Brother Watch first uncovered the Meadowhall trial, among several others, at shopping centres and museums across the UK. Its director is Silky Carlo.
We've been investigating the very thin line between police facial recognition and private companies using facial recognition, and about how they're supplying each other with photos and technology. And then that means that this is even less accountable to the public. It's more difficult to find. We're now at a stage where we think millions of people in this country could have been scanned by facial recognition, and many of whom don't even know about it.
The Information Commissioner's Office told us it had looked into the Meadowhall trial and closed the case without taking any further action. Others still aren't satisfied. Tony Porter is the Surveillance Camera Commissioner, who reports to the Home Office and oversees public bodies like the police. He's concerned by such private partnerships and still has a lot of questions about that Meadowhall test.
What was the strategic oversight in South Yorkshire Police in relation to that exercise? At what level was that exercise approved within the hierarchy within South Yorkshire Police? And then how did South Yorkshire Police ensure that they were demonstrating compliance to the regulatory landscape? And those are the strategic issues that I think South Yorkshire Police have to answer.
He told me he's seeking a meeting with South Yorkshire Police to try and get some answers. Tony Porter also wrote to all police forces, including South Yorkshire, in late 2017, warning he was increasingly concerned about the growing use of facial recognition. He asked forces to tell him before they deployed it. And yet, the trials in the Trafford Centre in Manchester, King's Cross in London and Meadowhall near Sheffield all went ahead the following year without any consultation with his office.
Do you think there should be some kind of list of who's using what and perhaps an inspection regime to check they are following the rules?
Yes, I do. And I think if the public are going to be reassured that there is effective regulation, there does need to be a very clear oversight mechanism.
So if you're, for example, a private company, you own a bunch of shopping centres, airports, whatever it is, there should be a system whereby every now and again you're inspected to say, well, hang on, where are you getting the data from? How are you using this? Is that the kind of regime we're talking about?
I would certainly say where there is a partnership between those organisations and the police, yes, because in my view, that is very clearly state surveillance working in partnership.
That's also a concern for veteran Conservative MP David Davis. He's been campaigning for specific laws on facial recognition, but says he understands the benefits too.
It holds out scope for some effective law enforcement. There's no doubt about that. I think those who say we can't have it at all are unwise because they'll lose that battle, and rightly they'll lose it. But on the other hand, it is one of those technologies which is hugely powerful. Powerful as a force for good, but also powerful as a force for bad. Police forces around the world always struggle with new technology. Always struggle with new technology. It takes time. They're not recruited as scientists. They're not recruited as technologists.
When it comes to dealings between the police and private facial recognition companies, we also struggle to get straight answers. We submitted Freedom of Information requests to the UK's 43 forces, asking if they shared images with private firms for facial recognition. Just 9 responded to say they didn't have such partnerships in place. 7, including Greater Manchester Police and the Met, didn't respond. And the remaining 27 refused to answer, claiming national security exemptions such as the need to protect covert surveillance. The idea of using security concerns to avoid revealing the information got short shrift from MP David Davis.
I think it's a bogus argument, to be honest. There are vast numbers of surveillance cameras in the UK. The ability to use them with the sort of software we're talking about is available, at least theoretically, for every single camera in the country. So what does it tell a would-be enemy to know that, you know, you've used it on some camera somewhere? Nobody's asking them to say, right, give us a map of where all the cameras are, you know, which might theoretically, but I think it's very theoretical, give an advantage. So no, I think the FOI response on that case is ill thought through.
Police aren't just supplying images to private companies for facial recognition. They're out on the streets with their own watch lists, cameras and technology, and not everybody's happy about it. This month, fans arrived in Cardiff for a home game against Swansea, a tense fixture, giving the team's historic rivalry.
Welcome to the Cardiff City Stadium. They don't need to ramp up the atmosphere, but they are anyway.
Ramping up the atmosphere outside the ground, for some at least, is South Wales Police decision to bring along 2 vans equipped with facial recognition tech. The response among fans is mixed. Some turn up wearing masks to hide their faces in protest. Others, however, fully support it.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea because, you know, it's ridiculous to not take as many precautions as possible.
If you haven't done anything wrong, then there is no need to be worried about facial recognition. End up. It's only if you've been a naughty boy or then you've got something to worry about. Otherwise, there's no problem with it.
My name's Vince Arm and I'm the spokesman press for Cardiff City Supporters Club and chairman of Football Association Wales.
The main reason for today is we think it's the use of facial recognition is disproportionate for the risk. There's no intelligence ever that any of our banned football supporters have tried to go to a game whilst banned, and it's the same as Swansea. And I don't believe that their watch lists are just the people who are banned. I believe they probably extended it to risk supporters who they think is risk, and what determines a risk supporter. They're using this as a trial. They're using it on football fans because they can get away with it. Even though we're football fans, we do have rights. You know, we're not criminals.
Big Brother Watch's director, Silky Carlo, was there too.
I think it's been an extraordinary reaction. I'm stood now next to someone wearing a mask who you presumably want to come in and enjoy the game rather than be having to do a protest on a Sunday morning before the game. We've just seen a big demo out here with lots of people wearing masks and saying that they think it's over the top. There's no oversight, there's no structure to the so-called trial. In fact, it's not a trial. They're in their 4th year of using it now. This is an operational deployment.
But it's not just major events like football matches and concerts where South Wales Police are deploying facial recognition. Office worker Ed Bridges was popping out for lunch when he spotted something unusual.
The first time I saw
the cameras being used myself was almost 2 years ago exactly, in the run-up to Christmas 2017, when I was walking along Queen Street, where we are now, to get a few Christmas presents, and there was a police van just parked in the middle of the pedestrian shopping street. And when I got a bit closer to it and saw the words facial recognition technology, I thought, well, what's that doing here? And by that point, it would have captured my data several times over. There was no warning, there were no police officers giving out information. It was just there capturing people's biometric data.
Ed Bridges saw the vans again when he demonstrated against an arms fair in the city. He took South Wales police to court last year with the human rights group Liberty. He lost his case, but is now appealing.
People I've chatted to say, well, look, we are in a situation where unfortunately terror attacks do happen, as we've seen quite recently. Police need these kind of tools. And ultimately, nothing happened to you. There were no ill effects on you because, you know, you didn't have anything to hide because, as you say, you're a law-abiding citizen. So no ill effects for you.
They are using it often to look for relatively low-level offenders. And, you know, to do that and capture the data of everyone who goes past, I think, is disproportionate, which is one of the reasons we're challenging it. And our right to privacy, to walk down the street without, as I say, giving away that kind of digital fingerprint to the police, is something that we should absolutely stand up for.
And that's exactly what the South Wales Force have done, according to Alan Michael, the local police and crime commissioner.
We've been very, very careful, and the chief constable is as keen as I am on this, to make sure that we only use it within limits of strict accountability within the law of UK, and balance very carefully, on the one hand, the protection of the public, and on the other hand, the protection of civil liberties. And I don't think that is generally understood by people who've been critical of what we're doing.
He also rejects claims that live facial recognition is intrusive.
I don't understand the concept of intrusion when people in this country are walking up and down streets, going into banks, going into shops, and being caught on CCTV on a minute-by-minute basis almost. And those images are kept for up to 30 days when we are looking to locate people. The images of everybody except somebody who's on a watch list, and those will be wanted criminals in the main, anybody who isn't on that watch list, their photograph is immediately eliminated. It's worth remembering that there have been arrests of some serious offenders as a result of this. It's included people who've been wanted by the police for affray, for robbery, for theft, for drug offences. There has not, in South Wales, been a wrongful arrest.
Ed Bridges' legal case continues, as does South Wales Police use of facial recognition. The force is soon to trial it on cameras mounted on officers' uniforms. And as we've already heard, the Metropolitan Police are now set to include it in their arsenal of law enforcement tools. That's worrying to University of Essex academic Peter Fussey, who monitored the Met's trials and says accuracy was an issue on at least one of the days when he observed.
There were 42 occasions where the computer issued an alert that an individual walking past a camera was on the watch list. On 8 of those occasions, can we say with absolute confidence that the computer was right? So on 8 of those times, the computer issued an alert. A human said that this alert was credible. That individual was apprehended in the street. Their identity was checked and it was a correct match, 8 out of the 42. Now, that's not to say all of the others were wrong. For instance, 4 individuals were lost in the crowd. We don't know. There were times when officers in the van said somebody wasn't a credible match, but they could have been because we never ID'd them, so you never know. But you can say with certainty 8 out of the 42 were absolutely correct.
What do you make of that? Did that seem a high or low figure to you?
Yeah, so it seemed surprisingly low given claims of a number of technology providers and a lot of the faith that's put into the technology.
Assistant Commissioner Nick Efgrave defended the Met's decision to go ahead.
We feel confident that we're now in a position where we've got a strong legal mandate, a really robust set of operating principles and broad support from the public to use it. So we feel now is the time to start to make operational deployments. I think even if there's one arrest that we wouldn't otherwise have made of a violent or serious criminal that's wanted either by us or by the courts, and that's success, I anticipate more than one. But every single one of those is making this city just a little bit safer. And that's entirely the purpose of this new technology. It's to help us and help my officers be more effective at bearing down on serious and violent offenders.
The Home Office says it fully supports these police trials, which it says have helped to identify, locate and arrest suspects in more than 50 cases where it wouldn't otherwise have been possible. They also point out that officers' time not spent searching for people can be spent elsewhere. Throughout this programme, we've been hearing about the watch lists that are essential to these facial recognition systems. Sometimes they come from police databases, sometimes private companies' CCTV. But privacy campaigners worry that because of social media, we're now providing a treasure trove of facial photos ourselves. Anna Bacciarelli is a researcher for Amnesty International. They've been alarmed by recent news reports of private companies scraping people's photos from social media sites with, apparently, nothing to stop them.
It is a wild west at the minute. We have an utter lack of regulation and a lot to lose in this space. We're seeing, you know, the rise of the sort of super tech giants. When they hold this much information on individuals, there's very little you or I can do to stop our images being part of a database if we even know that they are being used on such databases in the first place. And I think, you know, that feeling of helplessness that you have as an individual is really concerning, and that's only going to grow. You know, the big tech companies, many of them have called for state regulation, but at the same time, they're licensing their facial recognition products. So they continue to sell them and use them and develop them.
Even if you don't end up on a watch list, your photo posted online could be used to train facial recognition systems to get better at spotting faces.
Previously, kind of images that were uploaded, say, 10, 15 years ago, we had no idea of the emerging technologies that would come about in the next kind of decade or two. And really, it's an issue of consent. It's very difficult to contact the individuals on that database for consent, understandably. But also, you know, there are just huge ethical concerns around how could anyone know that their image was being used to train these systems and so on.
Amnesty are not alone in their bleak view of the legal regime. Most people we spoke to for this programme believe the current regulation urgently needs to be either clarified or replaced entirely. There are now calls for a temporary halt to facial recognition's use, especially in public areas, while the rules are sorted out. Several US cities have already banned it in public places, including San Francisco, home of Silicon Valley. Supporters of a moratorium include MPs on the Commons Science and Technology Committee, reportedly the European Commission too, and even the boss of Google's parent company, Alphabet. Scottish MSPs are reviewing facial recognition's use as well. One of those adding to the chorus is David Davis.
That moratorium should last until we've actually got proper legislation in place. Now, I raised this matter with the minister that dealt with this, the Minister of State at the Home Office at the time, who said in the House of Commons, yes, we're going to look at this and we're going to look at regulating, in response to pressure from me and probably others. And that's what needs to happen. It needs to be explicitly regulated. It needs to be debated in both Houses of Parliament. We need to see the data. We need to think through the risks. The United Kingdom as a state, as a government, has a habit of collecting data willy-nilly on the premise that it might be useful somehow someday.
One of the issues that's been raised with other interviewees we've spoken to is this idea that if you legislate today for today's technology, when something new comes along tomorrow, you could get left behind. Are you sympathetic to that?
Forgive the unparliamentary expression, but that's complete bullshit. That's an excuse for people to make things so general that they don't work. And we've seen this with lots of surveillance and technology and encryption technology. If you think that's the case, have a new bill every year. We have a new finance bill every year. Why? Because things change. Okay, let's do that. Better to get a very specific, very accurate, very precise control of a new intrusive technology.
Are we really supposed to believe that major police forces, the Metropolitan Police, South Wales Police, for example, are simply blithering on in the face of any evidence and using it anyway? They're using it on multiple occasions. Clearly, they feel they're getting results.
From a police force's point of view, it thinks about one thing, catching criminals. We have to think about a bit more than that. We have to think about the protection of the rights of the individual. You should no more give an absolute open sesame on personal surveillance, which is what facial recognition is, then you would give any police force the right to search you or your house or your car without a warrant.
As it stands, the key regulator in this area is the Information Commissioner's Office. They didn't want to be interviewed for this programme, and they wouldn't comment on any of the individual cases we've covered. Some we spoke to believe the ICO has too few resources and too much on its plate to really get to grips with facial recognition. The ICO told us it's doubled in size in the last 3 years, It's calling for a statutory code of conduct for police forces' use of live facial recognition, which tries to match people in real time as they pass the camera. It also told us it's looking into private companies' use of such technology, especially in another key testing ground for it, airports.
Many of us use the new facial scanners to pass immigration on our return to the UK. But if you've travelled through Gatwick and City airports in London, or Edinburgh Airport, among others, you'll almost certainly have been scanned on the way out too, and probably without knowing it, thanks to a tech firm based in Liverpool.
M-Flow is a solution that can transform your understanding of the people you serve. Using the world's most accurate facial recognition and sensor equipment.
As its corporate video explains, M-Flow's cameras scan travellers' irises, then use that to track them as they move through the airport. But the aim isn't necessarily security. The technology is mainly used to speed up queues, according to Neil Norman, boss of M-Flow's manufacturer, Human Recognition Systems.
It's a what we refer to as a benign application of facial recognition. So we're not actually identifying anybody. So we never know who the people are. There's no way of accessing that information. And it's never related to any other important information like the name of that individual or anything else pertaining to the identity of the person. We don't tag you in any way, in actual fact. You're just a number that is randomly processed through the system, and there's no way of accessing any of that information. I think, you know, as we're seeing with this whole topic around facial recognition at the moment, I think the thing that people find scary is if they can relate it to their name, and then they can start connecting that information to other systems and understanding where people have been and what they've done and what their behaviours are.
Facial recognition technology shows no signs of slowing down. From shopping malls to airport lounges, football grounds to seaside towns, it's increasingly embedded in our society. But while the computers get faster and more accurate, the law still seems badly out of focus. The tech may be cutting edge, but it begs an age-old question. Who's watching the watchers?
This edition of File on 4 was presented by Jeff White and produced by Helen Clifton. You can discover more music, radio, and podcasts on BBC Sounds.